This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Seattle City Council member Richard Conlon, chair of the Council's Environment, Emergency Management, and Utilities Committee. Councilmember Conlon is here today to tell us about the city's zero waste strategy, which was passed unanimously by the City Council on July 16th. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
What is a zero waste strategy? What's the definition?
The definition really is the philosophy of how you treat things that we consider waste in our society. And the goal is to treat them not as waste, but as a resource, so that we try to emulate what nature does with waste, and that is to make sure that it goes back into the cycle and that we reuse, recycle, do whatever we can to prevent it from having to be just disposed of in a landfill.
Could you say a few words about the history of the zero waste concept?
People have been working on it for quite a while, particularly in Europe. It's been a really strong idea, and many of the countries in Europe have adopted zero waste as a philosophy and a strategic approach. In the United States, a number of cities have been thinking about it, and the sort of principles have been worked on in several different places. But this is the first time we've pulled together a strategy that really takes zero waste as the philosophy and then lays out a series of steps as to how we're actually going to try and get there.
Would you remind us what currently happens to the solid waste generated in the city of Seattle?
Well, a lot of it is recycled, and it's important to say that we've done a great job at making sure that we do have some recycling and waste reduction in place. So about 44% right now is recycled of the solid waste the city controls. The remainder is put onto a train in containers, and every day a mile-long train leaves the city of Seattle and goes to a landfill in eastern Oregon.
Would you give us the history of how Seattle has dealt with its solid waste?
Well, back in the 1980s, or before the 1980s, Seattle mainly just disposed of it in local landfills. We actually still have two landfills we're cleaning up, Kent Highlands and Midway, where there was contamination of the land around there, and the city is still paying for cleaning up that contamination. Then there was a Cedar Hills landfill, which is still in operation, that King County owns over in eastern King County. So that's basically where things were disposed of. In the 1980s, it became clear that there were problems with landfills, and so the city at that point launched an idea of, well, let's do something different with our garbage. And at that time, the solution was to build a waste-to-energy plant, an incinerator, in South Park. People in South Park were not very happy about that. The technology was still pretty primitive at that time. It's greatly improved since then, but the people in South Park and a lot of other people said, wait a minute, we don't want to have this in our community, and furthermore, we should be recycling more. So that's when the city adopted its major recycling strategy in the mid-1980s. And the goal that was set at that time was a pretty ambitious one, and that was to recycle 60% of our waste. We've never reached that goal. It was intended to be achieved 10 years from then in the mid-1990s. And each time we've not quite been able to make it, we've been up as high as 50%, then had some backsliding during the late 90s and early 2000s, and then have been moving up again. And we're now at the 44% goal. So that's kind of the history of where we've been in the past. And so when we looked at this at the middle of last year, when we started reviewing our solid waste plan, I decided that we needed to do something a little more drastic. We hadn't reached that 60% goal, despite the fact that we set it 20 years ago. And so I felt we needed to do something really different and something that had a fairly comprehensive approach to taking care of our solid waste.
What are the specific goals of the zero waste strategy adopted by the city?
We basically adopted three major goals. The first is that we are going to reach the 60% by 2012, and we've laid out some steps for getting towards that. And then we're going to go beyond that and reach 70% by 2025. Those are the interim goals. But more importantly, from my perspective, because percentages are sometimes hard to compute depending on, you know, you have to decide what's included and what's not included and all that sort of thing. What we did was we set a cap on the amount of waste that we're going to send to a landfill. We are going to cap that at the amount we sent in 2006. We are going to reduce it by a minimum of 1% per year over the next few years. And after 5 years, we're going to evaluate that and see how we're doing and see if we can try and do better than that. That's kind of the model that we've undertaken in water conservation to do this 1% reduction per year. And the goal is to be able to not only achieve that particular type of a goal, but to do it even though we expect our population and our employment to grow. So while 1% may not sound like a lot, actually, when you consider the fact that we're steadily increasing in employment and population, it's ambitious. And it's something that, to me, is really the sort of key thing, and that is we want to stop sending stuff to the landfill, however we can get it out of that system.
Before we go into more detail, would you give us a brief overview of the specific programs proposed as part of the zero waste strategy that will help meet these goals?
Well, there are two huge components of the waste stream that we're going to target most of our programs at. One of them is organics, mainly food waste, and the other is construction and demolition debris. In the organics field, right now we have about 200 restaurants that recycle their food waste, and about 60% of our residential consumers have the ability to put food waste into their yard waste, and then there are somewhere around 5 or 10% of our consumers who do backyard composting of their food waste. So that's kind of the base that we start from. Then we look at what the opportunities are. First of all, it's very easy for us to expand the single family, and that's where we're going to be able to move pretty fast because already most people are doing something about food waste in single family. So we're going to try and make it more convenient for people in the single family community. We're going to give everybody the opportunity to have bins and incorporate that into their service. We're going to try and move to weekly pickup. We're going to evaluate that and make sure we can do it, but that's one of the goals that I've set is to move to weekly pickup. And then we're going to allow all foods into it so that meats and dairy products, which are currently excluded, can be put into it. So the current yard waste bins will continue and people will be able to put more stuff into them. And then people who don't have yard waste service will be able to get a smaller bin that they can use just for food waste. And people who do backyard composting will be exempt and they will not have to have an additional bin, but they will just have to continue with their backyard composting. We're also going to move into the multifamily area, which right now has virtually no service, and it's kind of a challenge in multifamily because in multifamily, you've got to get a whole lot of people agreeing on not contaminating the bin. And so we're going to pilot a number of different ways with the long-range goal of making sure that we get multifamily up to the same level as single family. Interestingly, we did a survey, and people in multifamily residents are actually really enthusiastic about the opportunity to recycle food waste. So we feel like there's a good base there. It's just a matter of getting the system. And we're going to dramatically expand the restaurant collections. That's mostly done in the private sector. So what we need to do is to provide the kind of incentives. It's not controlled by the city. So we provide incentives and encouragement, and then ultimately we can move to a regulatory approach once we've got all those incentives and encouragement in place. So that's the food waste side.
Could you say a little more about why you specifically chose food waste as a key in the program?
Well, two reasons, really. One is that it is a big component of the waste stream that is currently not recycled very much. We think we capture probably about somewhere between 10 and 20% of the food waste currently. And it's very large. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8% of the total waste stream. That's one factor that there's a lot of it to do. The second factor is it's relatively easy to take care of. We know how to compost it. We know how to take care of it. We can produce a product that is useful as a result. So we've got a very clear and easy method for taking care of it. So the other major component is construction and demolition waste. And that's all the stuff that comes out of all the buildings that are being torn down and replaced, and then all the waste that is produced when you actually build new buildings. There, the recycling technique starts with salvage. So right now, because of the booming economy, the incentive is you get a demolition permit, you tear down everything as fast as you can so you can build as fast as you can. We want to change that. Give people a demolition permit in advance of their permit for construction so that they'll have the time to actually let salvagers come in, salvage all the materials that can be reused in houses and other buildings, and then do, rather than demolition, what we call deconstruction of the buildings so that as much of the materials as possible can be recycled. You can reach about a 90 to 95% recycling rate for construction materials if you actually do it in a systematic fashion. And then similarly, with the materials that come in, we're going to try and encourage people to put that in place through the permitting process so that they recycle waste materials from construction. So those are the two big components of the waste stream. There's a lot of other exciting things we're looking at, such as product stewardship, making sure that manufacturers take back products. That'll be partly working on the national and state level, but we're going to do as much as we can on the local level and looking at possibly banning some particular products. The two that are coming to the top at the beginning are plastic bags and styrofoam. And we will be taking action on a potential ban on those products early next year.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Seattle City Councilmember Richard Conlon, Chair of the Council's Environment, Emergency Management, and Utilities Committee. Our topic is the city's zero-waste strategy, which was passed unanimously by the City Council on July 16th. Would you now go into more detail about what is being planned to encourage product stewardship?
That's one of the most interesting things that we're going to be working on. We have a precedent in this state because there is a product stewardship law that was passed by the legislature last year relating specifically to electronic waste. And what that will require is that within about a year, there will have to be a mechanism in place to have electronic waste collected, and then the manufacturers have to pay for it. So one of the things we're going to do is try and make sure that that mechanism is as effective as possible. Because, you know, it's always possible that things won't be collected appropriately, that there will not be convenient for people, and it won't be well publicized. So we want to make sure that's done as efficiently as possible. And then we want to look at other products. The paint and coatings industry has realized that latex paint is something that they need to take stewardship of and ownership of, and they are experimenting right now. In 2008, they will begin a product stewardship model in the state of Minnesota, where they actually take back all of their paint that's being discarded by consumers. We want them to come to Washington next, if possible, and see if we can be the next pilot project for that stewardship model. And there's a whole series of other things that potentially can be included in product stewardship, that ultimately we'd like to see all manufacturers, as much as possible, take ownership of the fact that they have those products. They need to take responsibility for it. They're the ones that need to dispose of them when they're no longer used. Packaging material is a very important part of that. I was in Japan recently, and in Japan they have essentially a philosophy that the government encourages, that when you buy a product in a store, take off the package and you give it back to the store at that point. And the store is responsible for taking care of it, and of course the manufacturer may ultimately be responsible. So we want to try and do that kind of thing with packaging as well.
How will our transfer stations be improved for better waste handling, another one of the parts of the program?
Well, one of the things that we discovered, an important component in this project, was to look at what we're going to do with our transfer station system. The city had initially proposed, the executive had initially proposed that we actually add a third transfer station to our two transfer stations. And this would be located adjacent to the Georgetown neighborhood, and it would be specifically designed for the purpose of putting the containers onto the trains, so that the city would actually own its own rail line and rail spur and its own facility for putting containers on trains. We kind of looked at that. That was one of the things that got us really going on zero waste, was to say, wait a minute, why are we preparing ourselves to dispose of more garbage in landfills when the people of Seattle really have environmental values that are very different from that? So we looked at that and we decided, you know, we don't need to do that. We can continue leasing the train line that we have right now, the contract arrangement that we have, and try and reduce our usage of it rather than preparing ourselves to potentially use more. So instead, we're going to rebuild the two existing transfer stations. Those are going to be remodeled so that they encourage waste reduction and recycling. There'll be much more efficient systems designed as we rebuild and remodel them so that people can take recyclables in first. You get first preference if you're bringing in only a load of recyclables, and you can move through the system really fast. There'll be other efficiencies. The current ones are not as safe as they ought to be for workers. And we'll be looking at setting up some kind of things potentially on site, such as kind of swap arrangements where people can bring in usable items and then have those usable items taken away by other people, and other kinds of improvements that are going to make the transfer stations function a lot more effectively.
Could you comment a bit more on how self-hauling to transfer stations may be changed?
Yes, that was one of the most interesting things we looked at. We realized the transfer stations right now are the places where the big trucks come who have collected stuff out in the community, and then also people come who are cleaning out their basements, and small contractors come, people who might be building a single house or even doing remodeling, and they bring their stuff in. So when we looked at it, we realized that only about 10% of the traffic at the transfer stations are the big collection trucks. And yet they bring in about 80% of the waste. So one of the ways in which we can help the communities that are impacted by transfer stations is by trying to reduce the number of small vehicle loads that come in with people just driving in, waiting in line, generating air pollution, and in many ways bringing in mixed loads where the recyclables are not really separated. So we're going to experiment with ways to provide alternatives to self-haul. And some of the things we're looking at might be to provide a curbside pickup on some kind of either an on-call basis or perhaps a once or twice a year basis for people for those large items that they can't get into their garbage. We're going to look at whether the companies in the private sector who do this currently, there are companies that will come to your house, pick up your stuff, they'll even come in and take it out of your house and take it away. We're going to look at, is it possible for us to issue vouchers to people, perhaps to encourage them to use those companies? Or are there other ways in which we can really provide alternatives for people to do self-haul with a long-range goal of reducing the number of individual households that have to actually go to the transfer stations? That reduces traffic, reduces air pollution, and makes it more convenient and easier for people. And we just need to figure out what we can afford to do and what's going to be really cost-effective.
Let's move on now and talk about the plans to consider banning or discouraging by taxation certain products, specifically non-compostable shopping bags and styrofoam food containers. Why were these items chosen for consideration?
Well, there's two parts of the zero waste strategy. One is to reduce the amount of waste, to try and get at the huge quantities of waste that we're dealing with and reduce that or recycle as much as possible as that. The second part is to look at those things that have a major environmental impact and see what we can do to get those out of the waste stream. And two of the things that immediately jumped up were plastic bags and styrofoam. Styrofoam is a major environmental issue, particularly in water pollution. It's not a big quantity of the waste stream, so we're not going to save a whole lot of money in waste disposal by taking styrofoam out of it. But because of the environmental pollution that it produces, we actually feel that it might be worth it to do some things that will get styrofoam out. So we're going to be, over the next several months, we're going to be looking at, are there adequate alternatives available, which we believe there are. And those are things like, for example, takeout food containers that are made out of bamboo or out of other compostable products. Those are available now. We want to make sure that they're available in enough quantity so that they can be substituted for, figure out how long it's going to actually take to phase styrofoam out. And I hope we will consider and adopt a ban on styrofoam early next year in response to that. Plastic bags are an even, in some ways, more ubiquitous problem with the system, because not only do they generate water pollution, but they blow around a lot. Even the landfill people hate plastic bags because they're the toughest things to contain when they get into a landfill. And the city of San Francisco did a study of how much it costs San Francisco to dispose of plastic bags. And taking into account all the things like litter collection and the fact that the pollution they produce, they came to the conclusion to cost the city of San Francisco 17 cents for every plastic bag that is used in the city of San Francisco. That's a huge number when you think that we use something like 440 plastic bags a minute. So plastic bags, we're going to look at two alternatives. One is, should we consider banning them entirely, which is what San Francisco chose to do, or should we put a tax or a charge on them so that we encourage people to use reusable bags, which is much preferable? And one of the questions is, if you just ban plastic bags, then people may just go to paper bags, which, while there are certain good things about paper bags, they don't have some of the same problems, but nonetheless, they're not necessarily a great thing in terms of the overall environmental impact. So we'd like to encourage people to use reusable bags when they go to the grocery store. So that's also, we're going to look at the options and alternatives and then figure out by the beginning of next year as to what we actually can do with plastic bags.
What has been the experience of other municipalities that have banned plastic shopping bags and or styrofoam?
Generally speaking, there's not been a problem. People have adjusted to it pretty well. They've worked out arrangements with the grocery stores to provide for alternatives. And it's been an interesting experience politically. There's kind of a story about what happened in San Francisco that's kind of entertaining about that. San Francisco initially wanted to, rather than banning plastic bags, they wanted to put a charge on it to encourage people to use reusable bags. And so they were prepared. They started, got their legislation started. They were preparing to put a charge on it. And the grocery manufacturers they thought were working with them, or the grocery companies they thought were working with them and to design the system, And then the food industry decided to not cooperate, and they went around the city and went to the legislature and got the legislature to pass a law that prohibited cities from putting a tax on plastic bags. So the city of San Francisco, once this happened, was pretty outraged, and the Board of Supervisors decided immediately to ban plastic bags as the alternative. So they evidently didn't have the relationship that they thought they had with the grocery industry. But our goal is to try and come up with something that really is going to work, whichever one of those two things turns out to be most effective. And hopefully we can get those negotiations in good faith and do something that's really going to be effective.
What is your sense as to whether taxation or banning products is a better solution?
Well, it's a hard one to figure out, and that's one of the reasons why we're not ready to make a decision. One of the issues has to do with authority, and the city does have the authority to ban. There's no question about that under our laws, but taxation is very severely limited by the way in which the legislature has and the Constitution set up our authority as cities. So it may be actually more difficult for us to find a legal mechanism which can help us to actually put a tax on. So that's one of the questions that we're going to have to wrestle with.
What other products might be considered for being banned and or discouraged by taxation?
Well, there are a lot of possibilities. And what we would want to do is to carefully look at which product is actually causing significant environmental impacts or has a major impact on the waste stream so that we know that it's something that we can justify. And then we would take a look at each product individually and see if there are alternatives and if we can actually do something that's going to be practical and then make decisions. So the way that we're going to work it is, I'm not going to, you know, we have a whole bunch of things that we might consider, but what we are going to do is we're going to have our Seattle Public Utilities inventory the possibilities, come up with a list for us, and then review that list of what are the most promising ones, and then see what it is that we might be able to do about each one of those, and make that decision. Perhaps a year from now, we'll have that inventory and start making those decisions on other products.
What will be the cost of the zero waste program in the short run?
In the short run, we expect the cost to be very modest. We are putting in the 2008 budget about $700,000 for various zero waste strategies and actions. That's a pretty minuscule amount when you think that we have almost that many people in the city of Seattle. We had a consultant study that looked at the long-range cost, and their conclusion was that for the average residential customer, the actual cost of implementing all of the strategies that we're talking about over the long term was about a dollar or two a month. Then you have to balance that against the savings, because they didn't evaluate how much we'd save by not having to pay for disposal, how much we'd save by not having to build this third transfer station, and other things that are actually going to reduce costs, not to mention the environmental impact. So even in the actual cost, I think there's a possibility we might wind up breaking even and potentially not really raising costs in the long run, although we may have some short-run costs that we have to incur. And in the long run, in terms of the environmental benefits, we think the benefits are going to be really extraordinary.
What are the benchmarks by which the program will be evaluated?
Well, the main benchmarks are going to be our capability of meeting those goals that we've set. Are we actually reducing waste? Are we actually increasing recycling? Is the recycling producing products that is going to be useful? And there's kind of another idea that is going to be part of this, and that is the question of how does this fit into our economic development strategy? Because one of the things that I've been working on for a while is the idea that what we call environmentally sustainable industries, or industries that really target environmental quality, are a tremendous growth possibility for the city of Seattle and our area. We have a great amount of technology here. We have a great amount of people who are both expert and committed to environmental stewardship. And we've got a lot of businesses. We have several thousand people who are working on environmental businesses. So the region's regional economic strategy has actually identified the environmental industry as one of our potentially large growth industries in this area. And by getting people more opportunities to do recycling and waste reduction, we can stimulate the growth of other kinds of businesses that are going to provide better environment not only for us, but potentially be able to export some of that technology and that expertise to other places and generate more economic benefits for us as a result of doing that.
What kind of response are you getting to the Zero Waste program from the citizens of Seattle and businesses?
We've gotten pretty enthusiastic support. We had one of the most interesting public hearings that I've ever been to. We had about 200 people come to our public hearing on the Zero Waste strategy, and not a single person testified against it, which is something that I've never experienced in all my 10 years on the city council, of having a hearing where nobody was opposed to the strategy. Now, there are lots of details that people had, things that they wanted to suggest that we do one way or the other way. But I think that this really resonates with the philosophy of the people of Seattle and the philosophy of our business community, too, which has a strong environmental ethic that's been growing steadily in the business community over the last few years. So I feel that there's really strong public support. We are going to have some bumps, probably, as we deal with specific issues. But in the long run, I think that the people will support the strategies that we develop.
The Zero Waste strategy adopted by the city has as its goal reducing waste, but the specific plans so far don't truly reduce city waste to zero. Do you think it's feasible to truly reduce the city's waste to zero?
Well, a very good question. You know, you have to decide where you want to go before you can develop all the strategies that you need in order to get there. And so by laying out very boldly this concept that everything should be treated as a resource, we hope to have other strategies emerge in addition to the ones we've already identified. The European countries, several European countries, have set zero waste as their goal. The way in which they ultimately reach that zero waste for most of them is what they call thermal reclamation, which is essentially the modern version of the waste-to-energy plant. And that's kind of an interesting strategy to consider, because while they believe that they have solved the environmental pollution problems that made those plants less viable 20 years ago, the real question is that in fact the best way in which to reuse and recycle materials? And if you can pull as much as possible of everything else out of the system and then reduce it down to the things that you really don't have any other alternatives for, then their philosophy is, okay, we'll combust these for energy, and that's what we consider to be an approach to zero waste. That is going to be a very interesting and difficult discussion that at some point we may have to consider in the farther future. Fortunately, we have lots of stuff that we can do right now to deal with recycling and waste reduction before we even have to consider getting at that last intractable 10, 20, 30% of the waste stream.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think the message is that we are moving in a direction that I think is not only a tremendous area of leadership for the people of Seattle and the city of Seattle, but really contributes to all of the things that we are so concerned about. The way in which we reduce and handle our waste really deals with the kind of approach towards sustainability that the people of Seattle are looking for, addressing the issues of climate change, addressing the issues of environmental and water pollution, getting some of the substances out that are causing so much problems in Puget Sound and in our water system, salmon recovery. All of those things are dependent upon our ability to manage the way in which our society generates waste in a better way. And we have the opportunity to do that. It's going to be a very exciting journey, lots of details to work out. So we're looking forward to people working with us over the next few years to really make this happen.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
We have just been speaking with Seattle City Council member Richard Conlon about the city's zero waste strategy. For more information, call Council member Conlon's office at area code 206-684-8805. Again, that's 206-684-8805. Or check on the web at www.seattle.gov/council/Conlon. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.